We began last week to discuss the prohibition in the Rabbanim of Bishalachov. We mentioned that, although according to Rashi's view, Bishalachov was instituted to protect people from eating treifa food. We were afraid that the non-Jew may mix in something for you, even though right now it's kosher, but who knows what's going to happen next time. But most of the poskim fellowship is that tells us that the reason for the prohibition was Mishum Chasmus, as a gezeira, to prevent intermarriage, prevent a little bit too much inappropriate socializing. So we said that even though the reason for the gezeira was Mishum Chasmus, one would have thought that there would be certain kulas, but would have thought that maybe in situations that arise where Chasmus doesn't apply, so maybe the whole gezeira wouldn't apply. So we saw as a general rule, we apply the principle called no plug. Even if this particular non-Jew doesn't have any children, you're not going to marry his daughter, he's never going to have a daughter, or even if it's something that works for you, and you're not really interested in developing a social relationship with them, we saw that most of the time, those svaris don't really apply. Nevertheless, in the Gemara itself, there are some exceptions to the rule. There are some examples that Chazal really did actually permit things that would otherwise have been bishalachim, and those really become critical for us. 99% of the shahs of bishalachim today end up revolving around the application of these several principles we're going to try to discuss a little bit today. So one of the principles is what's called adavar shenechol kamo shuchai. If you have food that is edible raw, say for example a non-Jew cooks you up an apple or cooks you up carrots, so those are foods that you could have eaten in the raw state, so those are not considered to be a problem of bishalachim. Why is that? What's the svar behind that? So here it's a little bit unclear why Chazal permitted this exactly. So Rashi, in Masechas Beitza, a couple weeks ago back at the Fiyomi, so Rashi has a comment that when you have something which is nechol kamo shuchai, something that's edible raw, that's not called bishul. And just by definition, that's not called an act of bishul. Bishul means taking food that is inedible, applying heat to it, and making it edible. So if it was edible beforehand, so that is not halachically called bishul at all. So the issa was bishulachim, and this is not bishulachim. According to Rashi, it doesn't sound like, it's not that the reason doesn't apply per se. It's just, we don't have the mechanism to asur. This is not called bishalachim. That comment of Rashi, that it's not called bishul because it was edible raw, this would probably impact in other areas of halacha as well. Bishalachim is only one small area of hilchos bishul. There are some even greater issues of hilchos bishul in other areas of halacha. For example, hilchos Shabbos. Bishul is obviously malacha deraisa on Shabbos. What constitutes bishul? So according to Rashi, it would sound like that if you cooked up carrots on Shabbos, that wouldn't be a malacha. If you cooked up an apple on Shabbos, that wouldn't be a malacha. So the Rambam seems to say this. I say seems because he doesn't say it outright explicitly, but there's a Rambam in Perek Tes for Shabbos that sounds this way as well, that cooking is reserved for items that are not edible in the state that they're in. So I cook a piece of chicken, I cook an egg, those are things. That's called bishul on Shabbos. I just simply cook up some carrots. What did I do? What did I accomplish? I could have eaten the carrots in the raw state. So this idea that Rashi writes in Beitza that the issue of bishalachim doesn't apply to foods that are edible raw seems to be the same idea that the Rambam is developing in Hilchos Shabbos. In Hilchos Shabbos, not everybody agrees to the Rambam. There are Rishonim and Tosfos in Masechta Shabbos that says that if you cook apples, Tosfos Mamash talks about tapuchim, about cooking apples. So Tosfos writes that that would be a problem. Tosfos writes that there used to be a practice that they used to leave, I don't know whether it was a modern day equivalent of a chult or something, but it was some kind of a food that they would leave on the fire from before Shabbos, and it wasn't always edible, it wasn't always cooked by the time Shabbos would begin. So Tosfos a whole discussion about the permissibility, lack thereof of doing such a thing. So in the middle of that discussion, Tosfos writes that they used to have apples that were in that quasi chult. So Tosfos says you have to be very, very careful because if the apples aren't cooked yet, if you're going to open the oven door and close the oven door, so the closing of the door may hasten the cooking of the apples, and that's a problem. That would be malacha deraisa. If you cause something to cook quicker, let's say, for example, I have food in the oven from before Shabbos, whether you're allowed or not allowed, depending on details. But let's say I have food in the oven from before Shabbos, and the food is not fully cooked yet, and I close the door so that I'm making the food cook faster. Let's say I have food on the stovetop, it's not fully cooked, it's not fully ready, and I take the cover off, and then I put it back on again. So putting the cover back on again, that's mamash bishul, because you're making the food cook faster, even though it would have cooked anyway, but you are hastening the cooking process. That's explicit Gemara. That's a very, very serious problem. So Tosfos discusses the issue of bishul on apples, even though you can eat apples raw. So you see that Tosfos disagreed with this Rashi, disagreed with this Rambam. So this is a loaded question of Shabbos, of Bishalachim, about why exactly is it permissible to eat food that could have been eaten raw. So again, so Rashi says the reason because it's not called the Baisa Bishul altogether. The other two suggest that maybe the reason is different. Maybe the reason is because the whole reason of Chastas doesn't apply. That the whole reason for Bishul Achav was to prevent the non-Jew giving you some very, very nice, fancy foods. So I go to the non-Jew's house and he gives me a steak. So I feel such a tremendous debt of gratitude. I could have eaten a raw steak. Now the non-Jew made me a steak. Wow, that's great. I'm going to come back for dinner next time. And I'll invite him to my house. And slowly but surely, things are not appropriate going to happen. But you can't imagine, if I go to the non-Jew's house, and what does he give me? He gives me a baked apple. He gives me some cooked carrots. For that, I'm going to marry into non-Jew to get some baked apples. And said, I can eat the raw apples. I can eat the raw carrots. So that's not such a big incentive for me to continue my wonderful social relationship with him. So therefore, Chazal weren't concerned with Bishul Acham under those circumstances. So again, it's not clear why there's such a heter of Nechal Kmo Shul Chai, either because halachically, technically, it's not called a Maisa Bishul, or because it's the reason that Bishul Acham was so far removed from the scenario. So under these circumstances, Chazal didn't apply no plug. Chazal went through
it. So if there's like a major shino
Oh, very good. Excellent. What are you talking about? So we're meanwhile just discussing the lumbus, the background, why this heter came to be, how's this going to play out in the mice, and that's going to be a loaded, loaded question. So one of the very, very important applications of a davish nechak moshul chai is actually water. The Gemara says that if a non-Jew heats you up a cup of water, that's not called bishalakam, for that very reason. I could have had the water when it was cold. Now, he decided to cook it for me. That's not a big deal. And that wouldn't pose a problem of bishalakam. The Gemara says in Masechta Shabbos that someone who's a very, very big Yirei Shemayim and has a lot of different Midas Chassiduses, so as a Midas Chassidus, you shouldn't even drink water that the non-Jew cooked. So somehow we haven't become such a big Chassidim today. Most of us are lying. This Kula that the Ikra did is that a guy cooked you with water, so that's not considered to be Mishalachim. There is a fascinating question which would impact on many of our lives, especially in the mornings. I guess we didn't get the Dunkin' Donuts, so we didn't want to discuss the shalak. We couldn't have Dunkin' Donuts because before davening. Okay, that's the good svar. Okay, so this would have a very serious impact on our lives about one of a non-Jew cooks you water, but it's not just water that he cooks. He cooks some other things inside the water and has some nice flavorings inside the water. It's called coffee. It's called tea. Are those things considered to be bishul akam or not? So on the one hand, the water is nechal or nishtek kemoshu chai. On the other hand, the tea leaves are not. I don't think that raw tea leaves taste that very good. I can't imagine that raw coffee beans, I don't know if that tastes that good either. So the question is, what is this called? Do we call this cup of coffee, do we call this cup of tea, something which is subject to bishul acham because the flavorings, the spices to it are subject to bishul acham? Or do I say no? That's all nikra shem, the water. So the Gemara in the second Mechav Beitza says, whenever you have a shot of bishul acham, so you have to always decide what the ikra of the food is. What's the main part of the food? What's the tohu part of the food? So what's the main part of the food? You have water and coffee. You have water and tea. Which is the main part of the food? Which is the tohu part of the food? So if I would ask you, you would probably, you know, at 9 o'clock in the morning when your eyes are closing, so you would probably say that the coffee is more important. And most people don't walk around having hot tea, having hot water down at 9 o'clock in the morning. The person really wants to have the coffee, but you can't have coffee without water, so you have to have water in to make the coffee. Otherwise, you have to eat coffee beans. So you'd ask me, I would have said, maybe the coffee is the ikar. If the coffee is the ikar, that's a huge problem. Then it would be subject to the iser of bishul acham. So the minigo elements we make on the shayla, because Chachuva, your dad quotes two opinions about the shayla, that he quotes, there's some Taka said that coffee is a problem with shalakam, and tea is a problem with shalakam, and you have to make your own cup of coffee, you have to make your own cup of tea, and everything is all set. And other posts could make them and say that no, that's all Nikroshim, the water. The Iker is the water, and everything else is just there to spice up to give a little taste of the water. But it's really called just a goy cooking you hot water, and therefore it's permissible. So I think, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but I think, I'll put my hand up with a show of hands, I think most people are lenient about this. Most people do not, are not so careful when they go to get a cup of coffee or a cup of tea. I'm not talking about other kashrus issues involved with other coffee establishments, there's a whole other world. But just the mere fact that the non-Jew is making you a cup of coffee, making you a cup of tea, so if all other kashrus issues have been solved, so I think most people assume that that's okay.
To move away from the more is a personal thing, meaning that recently, in the past few years, they come out, when it comes to meat, a coffee rub, or using coffee in a different way. Now,
so what part of my English, what does that mean?
Meaning that you could put coffee, you could grind coffee, mix it with salt, pepper, and put it on a steak, and cook the steak.
No, but you would have to cook the beans. No one's eating the coffee beans raw, all
right? Right.
Okay, good. So that's all for our purpose. That's all that's critical to determine. So if it would change to the point where people mom start eating coffee beans raw, so that'll be mutar l'chodesh. Right. So things will change. I mean, things do change. Whether this particular thing will change, I don't know.
And for cooking, like you mentioned before about like requiring Shabbos cooking. So do we like coffee is roasted before?
You're leading almost into a very very loaded question. If you put together all the pieces that I just said, that Bishul Acham and Bishul Shabbos follow the same rules, like that Rashi and Beitzah, and the Gemara says explicitly that water is not subject to Bishul, so somebody has got to scratch their head and say, wait a second, did the rabbi just say you can cook up water on Shabbos? You can heat up water, I mean, Natorah. Can you cook up water on Shabbos, Natorah? Because water is a Davash and Nechal, a Nishnet, Kamosh Yuchai. So that's even, forget about the coffee and the tea, this is even more loaded question.
Right.
I can sprinkle myself with a cup of hot water on Shabbos.
So also, you said, like the Chris Garam says that making tea on spice, it's not right.
So then
that would be okay.
Yeah, okay means relatively okay. It means cliche okay. That doesn't mean mamash mamash okay. So the consensus view.
As bishlach, it's
spice, right. So lemaisa, the answer to that question is that it's not right. That this cheshbon, even though it sounds like it should connect all the dots, that should be the conclusion. That's beferish not the same. The Rambam writes explicitly, "Mechamis amayim is chayim." You heat up water on Shabbos. That's a nisa deraisa. So the question is, why exactly is that? Manishtana bishalacham from bishul Shabbos vis-a-vis water. So it's not 100% sure why that difference is true. There's a lot of nazar. Others will try to talk about that. But the overwhelming majority of view is that heating up water is a melacha deraisa. I say that with a little reservation. One of the achronim question, maybe the answer, maybe the question is better than the answer. Maybe in a chenam, maybe heating up water in Shabbos don't need the rabbanim. But all the sugyas in the Gemara doesn't sound that way at all. And therefore, the assumption is that there is some answer to that question. Why the two are different?
But as a follow-up, related to a different Hilchos Shabbos question, the rabbi member in the Hilchos Shabbos here mentioned that when it comes to cutting up vegetables for a salad, you can't cut them up too small because then why would that be the case if you
Oh, berries are mechavim to the rush. So the rush is a cloud when it comes to melachas tochein. If you're not accomplishing anything, what's the difference? I have a cucumber, I'm eating it whole, I'm eating it part. What's the difference? So you're right. That's exactly what the rush may hold. And others disagree. Others say that this, it's very hard when you start jumping from one melacha to another. So we're talking about melachas bishul. You're talking about melachas tochein. So the two melachas don't necessarily follow the same rules. Very good. Got to go back to the notes from 5 years ago. Okay, anyway, so back to the Bishul Acham story. So the klal exists. The Gemara is explicit that everybody buys into this kula of Davish Nech Kamosh Yuchai. What's the lumpus is, based on Rashi, based on others, that's up for grabs. How exactly do you define when you have a mixture of food? Some of it is Nech Kamosh Yuchai, some is not. That also becomes a little bit tricky. But Lechara, the definition of Nech Kamosh Yuchai should really depend upon the time and place. As a rule, the halacha doesn't change, but mitzias changes. So the halacha is not quote unquote changing, but it's just reflecting what a new mitzias is. And this could work bein lekula bein lechumra. So you could have foods that in the days of Chazal may have been not nechal kamo shulchai, maybe it's not as a nechal kamo shulchai, and vice versa. So the post can discuss about certain things that in our world we would like shy away from. But it's because eggs. So eggs are davar shenechal kamo shulchai. So we think that not, those of us wouldn't eat raw eggs. Even though, you know, the chazanim, at least the gargle does, the eggs. Have a lot of adults, I don't know if I should say this in a public setting, but some of you may remember back from your youth, although this is probably way before you, back from my youth, about the famous Rocky, if I'm not mistaken. Remember? Rocky was the famous boxer. So there was a famous scene in a certain movie about Rocky. You know, taking six eggs, one of the famous scenes, and gargling down and drinking down the six eggs, one of the most nauseating scenes. So I remember years later, when I learned to sing about Bishul Acham and eggs, that was the only image I could have in my mind, right? With the eggs and nechach kamo shulchai. But I think we have a right to say the principle called butler daito etzel das kol adam, that one reshugin in a boxer is drinking raw eggs, that doesn't speak for us. So the post have some interesting things. They start talking about potatoes. Potatoes? Who in the world would eat raw potatoes today? So you have a lot of strange things. You look in the Svarim back in Eastern Europe, so you see all kinds of strange things. You're not sure. Are they Nechel Moshe Chai? So the answer doesn't matter what they said 200 years ago. What matters is today. Is this another Nechel Moshe Chai or not? This, of course, set the stage for the most fascinating potential change in Nechel Moshe Chai, and that's vis-a-vis fish. Fish was always assumed, the Gemara says, the Feirish, the Sechel Shabbos, and the Sugi of Muktzah. Anything that's totally inedible, the state that it is muktzah mamish. A lot of people are not aware of this. A lot of people will go to the closet on Shabbos and start moving around a bigger flour, they'll move around the bigger pasta, they'll start moving around all kind of stuff that is not Nechal Dechal, no one would ever eat in that state. So on Shabbos, that's also, that's Mamash Mukta. And you don't even have a cooler of Lutzach Makomo. Lutzach Makomo means if I have a pencil on the table so I can move the pencil out of the way. But if I have a Dovash Mukta, if I have a Dalabal on the table, if I have a wall on the table, things that are Mukta Machmas Gufa, Mukta Mamish, so that would be a problem. We had a Shaila of a potential, interesting, Shabbos, we had a potential Mukta Machmas Gufa versus a Mukta Klisha Machmas Yisr on the table this Friday night. So my grandson Shmuel decided that it's time to light Chagiga candles. So we took out from the bottom shelf the three bear menorah that somebody gave us when Blima was born. He likes the three, so he decided, he puts it on the table, says he's ready to start learning. He's very machmir, it's more than Shlosh Yom Kippur B'Chag. He announced that he's ready to light Chagiga candles. So the problem was, he put it right down where I wanted to make Kiddush, which I have a Chanukah menorah on near Kiddush Hayom of near Chanukah Mi'adif in the middle of Cheshbon. So I had a Chanukah candle there. So I was going to pick it up and just move it away. It's a klisha malach d'liyaser. But the problem was, it was a kind of menorah. It was a nice, I don't know how expensive, but it was like ceramic kind of menorah with the three bears that if somebody would pick up and play with that, I got a little annoyed. It's very easily broken. So now the shayla is that called a mukta machmas chisor and kiss? If you have a klisha malach d'liyaser, that's expensive a little bit, and you would be nervous if somebody would play with it. So that's a mukta mamish. So we're having a whole pilpul that the menorah part where the candles go into, I don't really care, that was a cheapy little piece of metal. It's the background. The three bears are the expensive part. So that was my lumbus. Can you split up the kli between the three bears and I should say this one for Friday night, Shaila. Between the three bears and the candle part, is that called muktzamam or is that called kli shabach liyasa? So Shmuel was makel to remove it away. So since it's probably going to lechinuch to everybody, maybe it's lechinuch near Chanukah, but clearly not a mukta. So when Mordechai said to Shmuel, that's mukta. So he responded, it doesn't make any noise, so it's not mukta. That's somehow the 2.5-year-old definition. Anyway, back to the story. So you have to be careful when you start moving things in the closet. If it's mukta mamish, you can't move it for anything, even if it's in the way. So one of the things that the Gemara spells out at the end of Masechta Shabbos that's food that's mukta mamish b'li shum safek is fish, raw fish. The Gemara, raw fish, chamashu, you know, in their life. Why would ever eat the raw fish? So some of the poskim are over the question that Mizban is that we have a lot of mishugoyim. It's called sushi. When we eat sushi, is eating raw fish. So maybe raw fish is not mukta mamish, and if that's true that raw fish is not mukta mamish, maybe it's not bishalachim either in fish because it's nechat moshu chai. So this is usually not assumed this way. Poskim have reservations with this. Part of the reason may be, and this is a loaded question in general, how do you define things with this shulachom, that any, let's say, you go to Costco and you buy something cheapy, raw salmon or something, that salmon is not nechal kamo shulchan. You cannot use that salmon to make sushi. So the sushi experts, I had a long talk with the guy who owns one of the sushi stores in the Five Towns about this once. So he was explaining to me that you can't just buy some cheap fish and turn it into sushi. It's got to be prepared properly. It's got to be ready. There's bacteria, mice, and a whole shtickle tire about the making of sushi. So one could argue that our fish that we have floating around our house, that's not really nechal kamo shulchai. Unless you argue that the min is nechal kamo shulchai. I mean, salmon in America is nechal kamo shulchai. This cheapy Costco salmon is not nechal kamo shulchai. So it's a very, very loaded kind of question. And we usually assume there is bishlachim on fish, and we assume there's bishlachim on all these kinds of things that are potentially, so the potatoes can be bishlachim, and eggs could potentially be bishlachim, all of these foods, you have to just ask them what the normal eating patterns are today in America to determine whether something is bishlachim. There is a second kula that the Gemara suggests, actually machlokes the Gemara, but we pass in the kula on this. Also a very, very important leniency vis-a-vis bishlachim, and that's Eino ola shulchan malachim, something that is so cheap that it wouldn't be served at a king's meal. So the Gemara gives a few examples of this. Even though, again, it's not edible raw, doesn't meet the criteria of the first kula, but it is eino ola shulchan malachim, so that would also be acceptable. So eino ola shulchan malachim, also, why did Chazal make this kula? So this seems to be more understandable. Eino ola shulchan malachim, the whole reason doesn't apply. You're not going to marry the non-Jew's daughter in order to get some cheapy kind of a wacky mac or something. Maybe if it makes a nice steak, so that's something that you have to be concerned with. So whatever the Eina Olah Shulchan Malachim is considered to be permissible. But that's also a very, very tricky Hagdara. How do you define what's called Eina Olah Shulchan Malachim? That's also going to change according to the time and place. So you have to look around now in America, in Tavshin Pei Beis, and figure out whether this particular food is Ayla Shulchan Malachim or not Ayla al Shulchan Malachim. Then there's a further question, who's Shulchan exactly? Which Melech exactly? We don't have a Melech, we live in a democracy, so we usually assume the White House, whatever they're serving, the fancy meal at the White House, that's considered to be Ayla Shulchan Malachim. So there is a very, very big chumrah that's attributed to the Chazon Ish. It's not in print in the name of the Chazon Ish. I mean, it's in print in the name of Chazon Ish, but not by the pen of the Chazon Ish. It doesn't appear, to the best of my knowledge, in the Sefer Chazon Ish, which is always a very, very tricky statement, because the Chazon Ish said that anything that's not in his Sefer, so cannot be assumed that he actually said it. The problem is that line of the Chazon Ish is not in the Sefer, so you're not really sure whether to trust that line either. But it's said over b'shem the Chazon Ish, the following discussion. That they asked the Chazon Ish years ago about sardines. Sardines used to be that famous food. Everyone ate sardines when they were a kid. Nobody. Okay, you could date yourselves by whether you ate sardines. So, Oscars, sardines, I used to eat when I was a little kid, and that was a common food. So in Europe, apparently, I think that was the first canned foods, if I'm not mistaken, in Europe. That's where all the discussions in the early post came about opening cans in shops, all have to do with sardines. So they asked the Chazon Ish whether sardines are a potential problem of bishalachim. It's a general question about canned foods and about factory foods. We'll get to that and look down the line. But just the mere fact that sardines themselves, are sardines considered to be ayla shulchan malachim or not? So the Chazon Ish, again, according to this supposed story, the Chazon Ish responded that yes. And the reason was because the Queen of England, or the King of England, whoever was running England, whatever, back in the 1940s, so he said that since they eat sardines for breakfast, so that's called an Ola al Shulchan Malachim. That was the response of the Chazon Ish. That's a very, very big chumrah, because what that means is that even though the Queen of England is not serving sardines at a state dinner, when the President of France comes to visit the Queen of England, so they're not serving sardines, they're serving a fancy steak or something. So how do you define Ola Shulch Malachim? Does Ola Shulch Malachim mean something that a king or a queen would eat at any time during the day? Or no, it means something they would eat at a very, very fancy meal. If you take the first interpretation, that's going to pose a lot of problems. A lot of food, most foods the king, the president eats. So like the post-game discussed about popcorn. Is popcorn a shadow of Mishalachim? Potato chips are probably Mishalachim. So one of the reasons that was always given why a lot of these kind of cheapy snack foods are not Ola Shulchan Malachim is because these are not things that you usually see at a fancy meal. On the other hand, I don't know, when the president's watching a football game, he's not munching on a bag of popcorn, maybe he is, I have no idea. So one could argue that if you go with that version of the Chazon Ish, that Ola Shulchan Malachim is La Dafka, it's going to be hard to find food that's not Ola Shulchan Malachim, as much as that. I think that most of the poskim assume against this story for the Chazon Ish. Most of the poskim assume, I think the Sefer Chalkos Ben Yamin and Hilchos Bishalachim, by the Five Okon wrote about the Ashulchan, Hilchos Nida, classic Nida, and the Zbachal and Tarovas. So his son wrote the follow up for the Chalkos Ben Yamin on Hilchos Bishalachim, the same style as his father. And he collects all the poskim. I think his maskana was that people don't really follow the story. They think that it's ain't Ola Shulchan Malachim in a fancy way. So as long as they're not serving it at a state dinner, that wouldn't pose a problem. So again, you have to size up each case, each kind of food, and see whether it meets these standards or not.
What if it's a food that they're not serving in the main court, but like that Hanukkah, they're serving donuts?
Right. So we spoke about donuts a few times that in the past, that donuts, probably the cooler for donuts are not a problem, Mishalachim. Donuts are not baked, so they're not Pasach or the Mishalachim, but they should have been a problem. So the No. Cakes, maybe. Cakes are a different problem. But the donuts, let's say, we'll stick for a second.
Just from that perspective, they're serving it not as an acre.
Right. So the question is, if they would really serve it honestly as a dessert at the dinner, as a fancy dinner, then that could pose a problem. But they're not even doing that. The only reason they're serving donuts at Chag is because it's a shtick of they want to make the Jews feel like they're at home, so they give them some jelly donuts. But if when the President of France comes to the White House, they're not serving donuts. So one could argue that that's not really called Ola Shulchan Malachim. That's what we're still assuming. I remember a couple of years ago when some of the people who went to some of the Hanukkah dinners reported back to me that they were, in fact, serving donuts at the Hanukkah dinner in the White House. So does that going to impact on our donuts? So I thought that not. Now we know why there are no donuts this morning and there's no coffee this morning. We just asked for the coffee, we asked for the donuts. And it's an easy way to save some money for the shul. No breakfast. That's the danger of learning Hilchos Bishalachim. You never know what's going to come up to be us. Anyway, the bottom line is the coffee is okay and the donuts are good.
Only because it was an in or out of particular form.
So that's also a tricky thing. That's a very, very loaded question. Say, it's tuna fish. Is tuna fish called Ola Shulch Melochem? So, yeah, nice fancy tuna steak is, but not a can of chicken in the sea or something. So would you say that, let's say, canned foods, one of the big tumults about Bishalachim in the last 50, 60 years was the issue of canned foods. So there are some who wanted to say that canned foods are mufka legamre from a Bishalachim, no matter what. Canned vegetables, canned potatoes, canned fish, anything that's in the can is always mutter. Why? Because there was never in a million years served canned foods at the White House. And others say no, that they wouldn't serve canned potatoes, but they'd serve fancy roasted potatoes. They wouldn't serve canned tuna, but they'd serve fancy tuna. They wouldn't serve canned salmon, they'd serve a salmon steak. So that's also a loaded question, whether you follow or not. The minig is that most of us rely on the coolers of canned foods, but see with other coolers. The reason why we're not so machbid on, let's say, best of my knowledge, when the OU gives hashkacha on tuna fish, so they're not having a Jew in there turning on the, heating up the tuna fish. They're relying on the fact that, number one, that's canned, so it may not be alashim alachim. Number two, the very process of cooking food in cans is called steaming. It's not regular cooking. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But maybe that's not called bishlachim altogether. Then they also have a tzir from Moshe's kula that if the goy is so far removed to the factory, you can never find out who they are anyway. So Moshe is a big, big chiddush. We'll talk about that also a little bit later. So I remember years ago, the OU position was that they weren't concerned with bishlachim and dunafish for a variety of these different reasons. And some of the other poskim weren't so thrilled about these coolers. There were some who were makbid on bishalachim, even on cans of tuna fish. So that's why you may notice that some of the Hamish brands of tuna fish, it'll say on a bishal Yisrael. So I mean, some Jew in Puerto Rico was turning on, pressing a button somewhere that to start the steaming mechanism in the canning factories for the tuna fish. So I don't think the OU, years ago the OU was not makbid. I don't think that to the best of my knowledge, they haven't changed their policy.
You said Rav Moshe didn't like the canned tuna.
No, there are other issues there were two issues with the canned tuna fish. There was the issue of bishalachim, that was a less severe issue. Then there was the issue of the treifas. There was a question of the dolphins inside it. I remember when I was a kid, when I started to first hear about the chashash of dolphins, I could never understand it. I said, I remember going to like the aquarium, dolphins were humongous, and tuna, I always thought like, you could stick one tuna fish inside a can, and then I saw a little later that tuna fish were as big as dolphins, they actually looked like dolphins. So there was a reason why that was a concern. So again, there was some, this was the big controversy, years ago, Rabbi Tendler asked about the tuna fish because of the chashash of the dolphins. Others disagreed.
The OU from Pesach has a Mashiach. So, I have a cousin who was Thomas or Moses Shira, so he stopped, you could watch Shopper if you're going to OUD, so he stopped up a little Pesach time.
There's really Mashiach, there's probably a guy standing there in Puerto Rico watching the
tournament. That's what the OU from Pesach
they said, Maybe it's Pesach reasons, I don't know, they say that the dolphins, the odds of a dolphin being in your can of tuna fish are between zero and zero. It doesn't happen. I'm not a mumch in the tuna fish industry, having gone to Puerto Rico to notice the canning of tuna fish, but the people who have gone there apparently have said that. They said that anything can happen, but it hasn't happened usually. There's a pretty good... you would hope that the food is being monitored a little bit better than a dolphin doesn't end up inside your can for many other reasons besides just cashless reasons. You don't want to eat dolphin. Okay. Anyway, back to this story. So we have two very, very important coolers, but each one of them is a little bit hard to put always into practice because you really have to ask yourself, is this really Nechak Moshuchai? And you have to ask yourself, what's the status of Zbanazet? And you have the other cooler, very, very important cooler, Eilal Shukhullah. We have to make sure that that's meeting those criteria of Zbanazet as well. Then there's a third possible kula, which the Gemara also discusses, and that's what if the bishul is not done entirely by the Jew, entirely by the non-Jew, but the Jew participates to some degree in the bishul. So the Gemara says that's okay also. As long as the Jew is participating part of the bishul, so that's mafkia, that removes the issur bishul akum. So why should that be so exactly? So this seems to be based on a little bit of a different idea. This seems to be based on an idea almost like what's called a heker, that the whole idea of bishalachim was there's nothing intrinsically wrong with bishalachim. According to most Rishonim, bishalachim is just a gezeira up to socialization, assimilation, intermarriage, etc. So if we can almost nip the problem in the bud and create some kind of a separation, and that it won't get that ball rolling, then it's okay. So what a heker does is is that it always reminds us, it always keeps us on our toes and says, I can't just go to the non-Jew's house and eat the food. I got to go there first and turn on the fire. I got to go in the back and flip the burger. So that doesn't lead to a very nice social kind of a relationship. So since I'm always going to have to be thinking a million times, did I participate? Did I do the beginning of the cook? Did I do the end of the cooking? Did I turn on the fire? Did I not? Did he turn on the fire? Da, da, da. So that itself will almost remove many of the chashashas of Bishul Chasna. So therefore, Chazal built into this iser of Bishul Akam leniency, this kula, that as long as there's a participation of the Jew in some shape or form, that's going to be okay. What exactly does that mean? What constitutes participation of a Jew? So that's also a very, very loaded question. So the Gemara discusses this idea of a Jew participating in the sugya of Pasach. We haven't even touched on Pasach, and we've talked about it in the past, but usually we have Seres Mechubash here in some shape or form. The Pasach also appears in the Mishnah in Masechet Bedizara, that bread that was baked by a non-Jew is also problematic for the same reason, Mishum Chasnos. And again, that's significantly less of a problem today for other reasons, though we'll talk about that a little bit when we finish Bishalachim proper. So the sugya of Pasach, there was the same discussion about what if the Jew participated partially in the preparation of the bread, so that would be okay. So there the Gemara spells out what that means. What's the process necessary to participate? So the Gemara says that even if the Jew just gets the fire going, that's good enough. As long as the Jew lights the fire for the oven, and then the non-Jew does the entire baking process, that's called the Jew participating as well. So that was a big machlekes. So we showed him, does that kula of a Jew simply lighting the fire, does that carry over to Bishul Akam or not? So some Rishonim said, yeah, why not? If Bishul Akam's also, Pasach Akam's also, and Bishul Akam's mutter when the Jew participates, and Pasachim's mutter when the Jew participates. So what's the difference between the two? So the Gemara says explicitly, lighting a fire is sufficient. So Manishtano, Bishul from Pas. So other Rishonim say, no, it's not the same thing. It's not the same thing for multiple reasons. One reason is, Pasachim is significantly more lenient than Bishul Akam. Haraya, most of us are not so much than Pasachim. We have a lot of kulas of Pasachim that don't fly in with Bishul Akam. So some Rishonim say, just because Chazal gave you a leniency in one, you can't extrapolate to the Mochama area. But other Rishonim say that Pasach was different because the lighting of a fire for baking bread is a much more chashuv thing. Again, you're talking to a guy who doesn't know how to cook, doesn't know how to bake. But in the olden days, when you had to get your fire started for baking, that was the tanur. That was a much more serious thing. And when the Jew really, really got that started, wow, he really accomplished something. They're cooking up an egg, cooking up making a bowl of soup or something. So that's a much smaller kind of a physical process, much less significant process. And maybe that doesn't count to be called the Maisa Yisrael to be Matah. So we're not sure what the reason to differentiate are, but there are Rishonim who definitely differentiate between the two. So this question, whether we should carry over that kula of Bishul Akam to Pasachim, and as the other way, carry over the kula of Pasachim to Bishul Akam and say that simply lighting the fire is good enough, as many of you are well aware of, this is a major, major machlokes. And this was really machlokes in the Sfarim Rishonim and the Ashkenazi Rishonim. The Sfarim Rishonim, followed by the Shulchan Aruch, not surprisingly, held that we cannot compare the two kulas. And therefore, simply having a Jew turning on a fire is not enough of a heker, not enough to remove a Bishul Akam problem. Pasachim, yes, but not Bishul Akam. And the Ashkenazi Rishonim, many of them were makel, and that's why the Ramah quotes the Yesh Omrim, that one has the right to be makel in this. So this kula, or according to the Sfarim, lack thereof, which sets the stage for probably the most common application of removing Bishul Akam in our establishments, and that's simply setting up a system that the Jew turns on the fire. But that whole institution of a Jew turning on the fire and therefore walking away, there's no problem with Bishul Akam anymore, that's an Ashkenazi innovation. The Sfarim really don't accept this. So we have a couple of things to try to iron out for next week. Number one, just practically what that means, how do we go about doing that? And then number two, what do Achenu and the Sfarim, we don't want to rely on this kula. So where does that place them in terms of some practical eitzes, in terms of potentially circumventing issues of Bishul Akam for this next week? So we're back in a regular time slot, so we'll try to, Mitzvah Shem, analyze it from this point next week.